Hey everyone, welcome back to the Morning Coffee Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Alexander. This week I'm going to be breaking down the evolution of Christmas and some of the symbolism and ideas that are associated with it. As always, if you guys get anything out of this episode, it would mean the world to me if you would share it with a friend. And if you have the time, since it is the season of giving, if you would head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, it just helps me get the show out there to more people and continue to do the work in the world that I absolutely love. Thanks again for tuning in. Enjoy the show. Plato said, "We can easily forgive a child who is afraid of the dark. The real tragedy of life is when men are afraid of the light." All right, today I want to talk a little bit about the North Star as a literary device in the story in which we find it, and of course it was made popular. Anywhere you look, whenever there's a nativity scene, there's often a North Star. The reason being is because the Magi in the original Gospels follow the star in order to find the birthplace of Jesus. Now, there's some interesting things going on here. So essentially, the king at the time, Herod, had asked the Magi to go find him, and Herod was apparently threatened by the birth of this Jesus figure. And so his idea was that he would find out where he was once the Magi told him. And then he would go kill him. What's interesting is that the Magi figure this out, and they end up just bringing him gifts, and then they end up going back to their own countries. Doesn't really say where they were from. You know, it's funny because as stories evolve through time, all of these other things get added. Like, the Magi weren't necessarily characterized as three wise men, although it seems that they made a wise decision. I think that's where that comes from, but it's just interesting how all these things get added on to the story. Likewise, there was no drummer boy or, you know, anything along those lines either. First of all, let's just talk about what a literary device is. A literary device is anything in a story that helps architect the story better. And so it does this in a number of ways. One of the ways is by adding imagery to the story. So when you're reading it, you know, it talks about the hot burning sun, and maybe you have a picture of what that might feel like and what it might look like. And the other thing it does is it also foreshadows what's to come in the story, and also normally has underlying meanings within the story itself. Now, one thing that is interesting about old stories in particular, you see this a lot in the wisdom traditions, is that for a really long period of time, the stories were actually only oral. And so they were passed down from tribe to tribe or from clan to clan. And that's the case with almost the whole entire Bible. And even the Gospels, you know, the earliest of Gospels were written like 30 to 60 years after Jesus died. And so this is kind of the way that these things take form and took shape in early generations. What's more interesting, or what I find to be interesting, is whenever you find that, like whenever you find an oral tradition, when you're looking back through history, what that means is that details that aren't important to the story themselves get kind of taken out. And so a lot of these stories that you might know of or hear of in wisdom traditions in particular are very short. And the reason being is because all of the details and fluff just got taken out because as people, we had to memorize these. And the point of memorizing them is because we learn things from stories, right? It's like the same reason that we read history, because history is actually about us as human beings. Well, when history is only oratory, and it kind of vanishes and becomes prehistoric, then what you find are a lot of really important stories about what it means to be a human here and what we can learn from those things. And so one of the things that I like to posit is the idea that the North Star in this story, the Star of Bethlehem, is actually a literary device that has 2, 3, 4 different meanings within the story itself. There are a bunch of different theories about what the star actually was. Like, some people say it was like exactly what we had last night, where Saturn and Jupiter are in alignment, and so they create this one kind of big glow in the sky. If you guys went out and saw that last night, it's actually the first time in 800 years that's actually appeared to us on Earth. So that's pretty cool. Other people think it was a nova, supernova, something along those lines. In any case, I'm not, like most of the time that I talk about this stuff, super interested in what kind of literalism you might be able to pull out of it. My curiosity is always in the art of the human experience. Like, what can we learn about what it means to be here based on reading these stories? And so I think one of the prudent things to ask ourselves is, well, what is the star doing in the story? Well, it's guiding people. Well, what kind of people? Well, people that we've decided throughout time are wise. And so it's like, okay, so then what are they doing? It's like, well, if you're wise, no matter how dark it is, right, no matter how desolate it is, maybe you can follow the light and maybe that light will bring you somewhere. So Jesus in the Gospels is the personification of truth and what's called the Logos. The Logos is the sort of benevolent good force that binds all of reality. In the Christian religion, they understand the Logos as being personified in the person of Jesus. In Buddhism, it might be more similar to what you would think about as the Dharma. So all these words are used in different ways, but I'm gonna stick with this story in this particular time so that we can learn all that we can from it. And so then we extrapolate out further. We say, okay, well, then what does this mean? It means that wise men, if you're wise, and you are trying to get to the birth of truth and light in the world, as we talked about yesterday, then what you've got to do is you've got to follow the light, the brightest light that you can find, no matter how far away it is, no matter whether you know what's going to come in your way as you're going toward it, right? The principle is that we have to follow the light to the birth of truth. Now, something else that's interesting is happening in this story as well. At the time of this writing, the Jewish people were living as exiles in their own land, right? Because the Roman Empire had come through and conquered the Israelite people. And so they were allowed to worship, but there was a understanding in the Jewish culture of that time that they were waiting for someone who would come and be able to deliver them from their bondage, right? And so if you read the Old Testament, there are all of these references to what they call the Son of Man. And there's a few different ideas, but what we would think of today is what we would use the term Messiah for is used over and over in the Old Testament. And so the Jewish people had this like sort of idea in their minds that they're waiting for someone who is going to deliver them from their bondage. And so now we get another layer in the story, which is when all hope is lost, when you're under the bondage of external forces in the world, you can follow the light in order to get to the birth of truth. And once you get to the birth of truth, if you foster that, it will lead to the redemption of the entire world. That's a really, really deep and important idea that's taking place here. What we could do is make this more real for us right now. And just think about the pandemic. I don't know what you guys felt, you know, as it kind of kicked off. You can think back to like March, April, May timeframe. But I felt a ton of fear and I kept like looking at the media and like looking at the death count and looking at the hospital bed count and like really trying to keep tabs on what this thing was doing to the world that we lived in, like what was actually happening. And one of the things that I found is as long as I was focused on that, not only did I not have a feeling of contentment and wellness and betterment in my life, I actually couldn't do anything. Like I felt like I couldn't build, I had to rebuild my business and think through a bunch of problems. And I really felt like I couldn't. One of the reasons why you just shouldn't make big decisions when there's a decent amount of fear in your body, because what you'll find is that the decisions you make aren't based on what you would consciously want if all things being equal, right? Because when fear is present, all things are certainly not equal until you've learned to put fear in the passenger seat, not in the driver's seat of your life. And so the point here is when you're going through adversity and you're going through destruction and you're going through tough times, if that's what you focus on, you can't rebuild from that place, right? You can't do anything from that place, in fact. And so what you want to do when you're going through really difficult times is you want to focus on what's not the destruction, right? You want to find the light for yourself in this time. And if you do, that will give you something solid, like a foundation from which you could build whatever it is that you need to build, a new life, a better version of the life that you have, maybe just rebuild what the destruction and chaos took. Same thing with when you're watching a movie, right? You're watching a scary movie. It's easy to get pulled into the fright and the terror because that's what the director wants you to do. But what you could also do is pay attention to what the hero is doing. How is he conducting himself during this? And maybe he is scared in the movie or whatever it is you're watching, right? You can do the same thing with history. It's like, okay, so what do the successors do? What do the people that triumph do? What are they up to right now? That's where you want to put your focus because that tells you how to be when the night is the blackest. And that's what the North Star is to the story and to all of us in the world who, I guess, care about symbolism and want to contribute to the betterment of the world that we live in. There's an idea emerging here that might be one of the most important ideas in the entire world. And that idea is when it's the darkest, When all hope is lost, when you're in bondage to an external force, you got to find the light. And what you do when you follow the light is you bring it gifts, right? You sacrifice something to it. You say, I'm willing to live subservient to this light. And then in doing so, what you usher in is the birth of truth. And if you're able to preserve that truth and use that as the foundation from which you can build another life, what you find is redemption. And redemption might be the most important concept that humanity has ever come up with. Because if we don't have the opportunity of being redeemed, what that means is we are constantly defined by our past errors. But as we talked about on the entrepreneurial episode, we iterate our way to success in this life. And so being defined by your past errors doesn't make a lot of sense if you are trying to do something new and exciting and different with your life. And so what you want to do is you want to find the light and follow that. You want to be subservient to it. You want to bring it gifts. And if you're lucky, you'll usher in the birth of truth. And if you're really lucky, that will redeem not only your world, but the world for everybody. I love you guys. Hope you have an amazing day. We'll talk tomorrow with episode number 3.